Welcome to another PI World podcast. This is an audio-only version offered as another way to enjoy our great content. A full video version can be seen on piworld.co.uk, where you can find many more videos of interest to investors.
Evening, everybody. I see quite a few faces I recognise from previous events, so some of it will be repetitious from your point of view, so please excuse that. I've got some things to tell you about our business with antibodies and blood testing, the kind of antibodies that we make for blood testing, some financial results and some news actually fresh from Monday morning, some developments for the future, issues that relate to our business and revenue continuity, a bit about the board and how we view things for the future. We're based in a small industrial unit in Farnham in Surrey, just down the A3, the other side of Guildford. There are just 12 full-time staff in our lab facility, which we own the freehold of. The labs look like this, with sort of production suites, with bioreactors, incubators, laminar flow hoods and controlled air facilities. We have equipment for purifying and testing for antibodies. So, antibodies and blood testing. If you have your blood tested at a hospital or a clinic, samples will be trafficked to your local provider, which may well be your local large teaching hospital. At such a hospital, you will find a suite of blood testing machines. And these machines are provided by large multinationals such as Roche, Siemens, Abbott Laboratories, Beckman Coulter, and Ortho. The blood testing machines are able to analyse blood for as many as 100 different blood tests split into different aspects of the menu, such as fertility, heart disease, thyroid disease, infectious disease and cancer. A lot of the blood tests perform their work using antibodies. So in the machine, you'll find a reagent pack which will contain an antibody which is directed to the hormone or the element which has been tested for in the blood sample. So here's an antibody ripped from Wikipedia with it binding to two of these light green circles. The antibody starts off life in the reagent pack naked, so it will not have these two green circles that it's looking to bind. So for example, if it was my blood here being tested for my testosterone hormone levels, in the machine, there would be a reagent pack for testosterone test, and the antibody would be an antibody specific to testosterone. When the robot mixes my blood and the reagent containing the antibody, a binding event takes place between the antibody and the testosterone, and that is signaled through some complex chemistry in the machine. So that's how blood testing works using antibodies. What we do in our lab is to create antibodies that we think might be of use, and then we mass produce antibodies and then try and sell them to the providers of these machines. So we manufacture around 10 grams of antibody per annum, which is about a heaped teaspoonful, which would be sold in the form of a liquid, and that would equate to around 5 litres of liquid per annum. So we sell this physical antibody to people like Abbott, Roche, Siemens, Beckman, and they incorporate the physical antibody that we send them in liquid form into their reagent pack for subsequent provision to their customers in hospitals and clinics around the world. The 5 litres or 10 grams of antibody that we sell accounts for around £2 million of revenue. So that's £200 per milligram, or £200,000 per gram. That's a total of £2 million, but our revenue is £8 million, give or take. The extra £6 million comes from a downstream royalty transaction. And the way that works is that after we've sold the antibody to, for example, Siemens, and my blood gets tested on this blood testing machine in Guildford at my hospital, Siemens will charge Royal Surrey Hospital Trust around £1 to have my blood tested. Of that transaction, of that £1, we subsequently receive a 2% royalty, i.e. 2p. And it's that downstream royalty that accounts for the extra 6 million of our 8 million pound revenue. And it also accounts for the kind of rather unfeasible look of our financial dynamics. If you look at our accounts, it looks rather unfathomably profitable, as if the accountants have made a mistake. But the explanation is the downstream royalty event that affords our profitability. Of course, that all sounds great, but the only way you can achieve that level of profitability is by making things which are unique and of great value to the downstream providers. Making antibodies in the way that we make antibodies, or so-called monoclonal antibodies, was first described in 1974. Some researchers in Cambridge were working with mice. They were immunizing mice with things and extracting mouse white blood cells, which, like all healthy cells, are mortal, meaning they have a finite lifespan. But certain blood cells will secrete a single antibody, perhaps against what you've immunized the mouse with. And what they did in Cambridge in 1974 was to work with a mouse cancer cell, or a myeloid leukemia cell, or myeloma. Now, these myeloma cells, like all cancer cells, are immortal, meaning that in the right sort of nutrient broth, they will grow forever. But they don't necessarily make anything of interest. What the Nobel Prize-winning scientists did in 1974 was to mix these two cells, centrifuge them, and then add an industrial chemical called polyethylene glycol, which is a bit like antifreeze, but a polymer of antifreeze. Now, what this PEG does is that it makes these cells combine together. So the membranes fuse, and the genetic material in the nucleus fuses, so you get unfeasibly large cells. The reason why they won the Nobel Prize was that occasionally, every 10,000, 100,000 of cell fusion events, they noticed that you've got hybrids which were unfeasibly large, and yet they were immortal and still secreted a single antibody. And that seeded biotechnology around the world, as people recognized the ability to be able to mass produce antibodies of a single characteristic. All we've done in our labs in Farnham is to set up a parallel technology where we immunize sheep, we extract sheep white blood cells, and we have a sheep kind of fusion partner, a sheep myeloma type cell. And we operate this 1970s technology to make sheep hybrid cells. We ferment them and we make purified sheep antibodies for subsequent sale. So our business is around using our sheep technology to make sheep antibodies to try and find improvements in blood testing, which are of advantage to downstream customers, the providers of the machines, and patients and doctors. An example of that is testosterone. Now, testosterone has been around for a long time, and testosterone testing has been around for a long time. What changed in 2003 was that a lady in Paris, looking at men, women, and children, and looking at testosterone testing on various blood testing machines, found quite clearly that all the machines that were being used were telling the truth and were accurate for male testosterone samples, whereas for women and children, whose testosterone levels are a factor of 20 lower, the machines were giving erroneous results that were being used as part of the diagnostics for menopausal women and prepubescent children. So clearly that was unsatisfactory, and it was down to the fact that the antibodies were not sufficiently good to detect the low levels of testosterone in these women and children. We and other people made a new series of antibodies to testosterone to try and solve this problem. We made an antibody called 6A3, which we sent to Roche, the market leader. They published quite quickly that they found in their Elecsys system they could simply substitute one antibody for another antibody and miraculously come up with a test that did work for women and children. For them, it was a breakthrough, and it was an urgent product revision to take out the old antibody, which was theirs, replace it with our antibody, revise the test, relaunch it, and it was a great marketing success for them to have a universal test and to be the first to solve this particular problem. From our point of view, it was an establishment of a niche, which we've occupied since then, because Roche's competitors at Abbott and Siemens and others have followed this and all use exactly the same antibody. So for us, It was a problem which was significant that was solved using our antibody technology, which is now quite a niche little business for us. Another example of a niche which we have identified and we're hoping to get significant value from is troponin. Troponin is a component of heart muscle which, after you've had a heart attack and your muscle cells start to die, this element, troponin, leaks out of the heart muscle into the blood and can be found in the blood and is indicative of having had a heart attack. The machines work using a pair of antibodies that bind to two different bits of troponin. An antibody might be linked to a magnetic particle, and another one might be linked to some kind of signaling agent, such as a fluorescent dye. And when the robot in the machine mixes those two reagents with the blood, if this is present, a sandwich is formed, and what the machine detects is essentially magnetic particles that then fluoresce. The machines can quantify that and help doctors find out if you've had a heart attack. Now, again, this has been going on for around 15 years. What's changed is that new antibodies are now capable of detecting troponin at much lower levels, much more precisely, and that enables heart attack diagnostics to be concertinaed from 10 or 12 hours down to 2 or 3 hours. And we've worked with scientists at Siemens to establish a new test which they've launched outside the US in Q3 2017, and they've just recently got approval to launch this new heart attack test in the United States. And we're excited about the development of this as Siemens replace their old test with a new test that's quicker. So that's an exciting development, which comes from not necessarily something new, but the goalposts changing and a refinement or improvement being available and facilitated through improved antibodies. I know some of you are interested in money. Briefly, the headlines of our financial year, which was reported on Monday, is that our underlying sales have increased from 7.3 to 8 million, so a modest increase this year. The headline figure of 8.75 included a back royalty, which was a bit of a one-off lump sum and therefore perhaps not worth entering into some of your spreadsheets if you use them. Because there's only 12 of us in a lab in Farnham, and because a lot of the revenue comes from royalties, not surprisingly, the profit margin is remarkably high. We do contribute towards Philip Hammond and his tax revenues, unlike some high-tech companies, and we accumulate quite a lot of cash. The dynamics over the last few years I'll come on to later. As far as our important antibodies are concerned, you can see this one here, vitamin D, which has increased quite significantly, not just in the last year, but over the last few years, as our antibody has been used by a number of companies for vitamin D deficiency testing. So that is a very important antibody for us. Another antibody that's important is a revenue stream that we have, again, with Siemens, and it's for a hormone called NT-proBNP. Now, this hormone is a hormone that's released by heart muscle, not when it's dying, but when it's struggling to pump blood around your body, and that is a demonstrative of heart failure. So this is used as a diagnostic for people who are short of breath or have inflated limbs. Those people have heart failure, and NT-proBNP is used as a diagnostic for that. And I have a note of caution here that this revenue stream expires for contractual reasons in July 2021. Then further down here, we have three fertility hormones. Testosterone, I've mentioned. Progesterone and estradiol are very important hormones that's part of female biology and are tested for as part of a fertility panel. T3 is a thyroid hormone that's part of routine testing. And there's troponin at the end, which is very modest right now. But as Siemens gradually replace their old longer troponin test with the new faster test in hospitals and clinics around the world, we're anticipating to see very significant growth from this, such that it will be upgraded and be towards this end of the plot in the years to come. Much more detail on the numbers for you, together with some estimates from our friends in FinCap up the road. You can all consider those in your own time, because I'm sure a lot of you are better at numbers than I am. One obvious implication of a small company that is so profitable is that we do generate a lot of cash, and that cash we distribute in the form of regular dividends, which have been increasing by 20-odd% over the years. Our cash aspiration is to retain around 5 million. We have been generating sums in excess of that, despite increasing dividend distribution, such that we have had special dividends over the last couple of years. These have been paid out to our loyal and faithful shareholders. So here's troponin. I mentioned it because it's very important for our growth over the next few years. So Siemens will be slowly and steadily rolling out this test. They now have the ability to roll it out globally. It's fair to say that my visibility in knowing exactly what these dynamics are limited, because I don't have access to Siemens' confidential sales and marketing information. But over the next financial year or two, we do expect quite significant growth from troponin. Another important aspect of our business is the future. We have a timescale, for reasons that I'll come on to, which is focused on 2025 to 2035. Now, I know a lot of people aren't interested in that time frame, but for us it's crucial. And it's a time frame within which our research and development activities can influence revenues. The revenues that we have right now tend to be from antibodies that we made many years ago. And the growth over the next few years will be from troponin, and we're not doing anything on troponin right now. So we have a range of research projects in the pipeline for the future. So these are not developing any revenue right now, but may well do in the future. And we've categorized them in terms of increasing potential value and increasing probability of success, such that we have at this end an activity where we're making antibodies for a company that are interested in cancer diagnostics. And the antibodies we've made, I'm pretty sure, will feature in commercial products in the next few years. I'm also pretty sure that the revenues will be modest and may or may not feature on the portfolio slide, because to feature they need to be many hundreds of thousands of pounds, and that might not. We have some other projects here, and I won't go into detail. This one here I'm excited by, and it's to do with amyloid beta that builds up in the brain of dementia patients, particularly Alzheimer's. We're making antibodies which will be useful in testing for fragments of amyloid beta that we will be looking for, together with our collaborators, in spinal fluid, blood, and white blood cells. And so this is something that's quite exciting for the future, because it's novel and because it's got a lot of science to go before it's proved. I think it's quite natural and quite mature to have it ascribed as being a low probability of success. And it's not on any spreadsheet I have. But nevertheless, it's part of our commitment to long-term development of our research activities to seed the pipeline with valuable things for the future. This slide describes in a bit more detail the dynamics of our business. So simplistically along the top, at time zero, we have an idea to make an antibody to something, or it might be a customer who's paying us to create some antibodies. Whichever the case, it takes us around a year to conduct our sheet work, our cell work, to come up with some small samples of antibody which can be evaluated by our customers. So the next stage at our customers is for them to use tiny trial quantities of antibody to make one or two reagent packs in their own research lab. And then in their own research lab, compare a reagent pack using our antibody, perhaps with their existing test that's marketed. This may allow them to conclude that they've wasted their time and we've supplied an antibody that is of no use. Alternatively, they may conclude that the prototype using our antibody is an improvement. If it's on the priority list of their commercial people, then it goes into development. A project team is then formed that includes research, development, quality, manufacturing, marketing, regulatory affairs, to develop a package of data which is then capable of submission to US, European, Chinese, and Japanese authorities for subsequent authority to market this prototype test. The obvious observation here being that this industry is heavily regulated in terms of the machines, the reagent packs, and how they're marketed. This process is time-consuming and resource-hungry at our customers and takes a number of years. And a couple of key implications of this from a Bioventics perspective. The first is that from research to revenue is around 5 years. So that's why when I talk about research now in the period 2025 to 2035, it's largely a function of the amount of time it takes to go from an idea to a launched test from which we will enjoy revenue. So there's a lag phase between research and revenue. The other implication of this is from our customers' perspective. After our customers have gone through this process, for example, with testosterone to make a new testosterone test, after they've done it and they've got approval and they've got a product which is sold globally, if it's the case that their customers like it and they have minimal customer complaints, the salesman will like it, the marketing people will like it, and the testosterone test will not be revised. What that means is that we will enjoy our modest royalty. If another competitor antibody comes along from whatever technology in the future, it will not be evaluated. It will not displace our antibody. And so those dynamics explain why, historically, if you look at our revenues, there's a relatively gradual, steady, upwards-only movements of revenue, except if we have a contractual loss. So it's quite an important aspect of our business and explains some of the important financial dynamics that we have. Shareholders, there's some people up in Manchester, the so-called Buffetology Fund, are now our largest shareholder. Gervais and Martin at Miton. I still hold 8.3% after having sold a few shares over the years. Living Bridge, previously known as ISIS, are a holder. Hargreave Hale, Warzatcher in Salt Lake City. And there's some others such as Jupiter, Edentree, other people that our brokers at FinCap have introduced us to and have bought shares. That's me. So I did science at Cambridge, worked at Shell, then in a biotechnology company, Celltech, before I got involved with sheep. Ian and Nick, I met at Celltech and we've been in touch since, and they're people who I know and trust and like, who contribute towards our activities, and I find their input very helpful. Trina's been doing our accounts for many, many years, and we know well, and so she acts as our FD. Overall conclusion, well, we've had quite a good year in terms of, we did have a contractual loss of around 0.9 million of a revenue stream which terminated for contractual reasons. We've managed to replace that and exceeded that such that the overall sales figure of like for like has gone up, which has been pleasing. So this more disappointing is the slow rate of rollout of Siemens and their new troponin assay. We remain utterly convinced that that process is inexorable and we will enjoy the success of Siemens' work in the future. Next year and for the next few years, our revenue dynamics will be influenced by Siemens and the rollout of their new troponin assay. And for the future, 2020, 2030 and 2035, that's kind of more linked to potentially new applications for troponin, where troponin gets used not just for chest pain in A&E, but also for people who are seeing their cardiologists regularly upon checkup. So that's an interesting development for the future, plus the other things on the R&D pipeline where we're hoping to see some success from some of the high-risk projects that we're doing. And we will be doing more of those high-risk projects into the future. Thank you very much. I have some questions now.
One of the problems with troponin, or one of the reasons it's holding it up, is the fact that biotin seems to interfere with it, and biotin is being used by the cosmetics industry. Is that, and you're in fact working on a test for biotin. I wonder if you would say more on that.
That's a very good question, actually. Biotin is part of a chemical Velcro that's used by our customers in their reagent packs. I call it chemical Velcro because you can get two molecules, A and B, attach them to male and female Velcro, and you can mix them together, and they will stick together at room temperature, and that you cannot normally do making chemical bonds. Normally it requires a Bunsen burner and heat and light, but the chemical Velcro works on the blood testing machines at room temperature. So it's a wonderful tool that people use. It's not Velcro, it's actually biotin and streptavidin are the two molecules which stick together as soon as they come into contact. And it's a wonderful piece of science that we use in our lab. And it's a great tool in biotechnology. Some of our customers use it in their reagent packs and as part of the architecture of the assays. That's all fine, but the problem comes if you go to Holland and Barrett and you pick out a 5 milligram biotin supplement and you take it because you believe it will make your hair bushy and shiny, and then you have chest pain, go to a hospital and have a test made by quite a few of the manufacturers, you run the risk of being sent home early because you will read zero troponin. Because the biotin will interfere with the Velcro that's taking place in the reaction in the blood test and will give an erroneously zero result. From my point of view, someone else's problem is an opportunity. So we're just starting a project whereby we're going to try and make some antibodies that mop up the Holland and Barrett biotin without interfering with the Velcro test that's going on, which would solve the problem for the people that have it. So that's why, yes, it is important, and for us it's a research project. I don't believe it's part of the rollout because Roche, who have a serious problem with biotin, they are on the market in the EU and outside in the rest of the world and in the US. They've done a lot of work to quantify the problem, inform their customers about the problem, so that when people present with chest pain, they're asked, are you on biotin supplements? So Roche have done a lot of work to mitigate against it, but the FDA view is it would be great if the problem went away. And so for us, it's a research activity, which will take another year before we're in a position to know whether A, we have sold it, and B, whether Roche have sold it with their excellent science, which I respect enormously. And in the event that we solve it and they don't, well, then that's quite an interesting commercial opportunity.
Two questions, Peter. Firstly, how many customers do you have? And the second question is, you're quite focused on the UK, the US and Germany. Is there potential to sell your products in other jurisdictions, Asia, Africa, South America, etc.?
Should I do that question first before I forget what you've asked? So if you look at the blood testing market, in order of market share, it goes Roche, Siemens, Abbott, Beckman, Ortho in Division 1. Division 2, Tosei Fujirebio, Mindray, Bio-Merieux, Randox, maybe. And then there's 3, 4. So that is the global market. When we supply to Siemens, say, the antibody goes to Philadelphia for incorporation. They then sell globally. So we do enjoy revenues, global revenues, from the activities of our customers. It's just that the physical sales go to their manufacturing plant, which might be in Munich or Philadelphia or Chicago or Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Does that include China as well?
A lot of blood tests, majority of blood tests in China will be supplied by Western companies right now. But there are a myriad of emerging Chinese companies who are trying to compete with the Western companies. They pretty much solve the IT and the engineering part of blood testing. The bit that takes quite a while is the wet bit, the antibody bit, and formulating tests that work and can be demonstrated to work. So that's a long process, and we have sown quite a few seeds with a number of companies, and so we have an interest in the development of those emerging Chinese customers. But it's going to take them quite a few years. So I don't have it on my spreadsheet, but we are involved with it for the future.
Troponin competitors, what are the competitors for the new test that you've developed? And I sort of seem to remember seeing something about one of them possibly using your technology.
The market is defined by installed blood testing machines. So Siemens' market share is 10 or 12%. And that is a function of the number of blood testing machines that are on the ground around the world. And blood testing machines tend to stay in hospitals for around 10 years. You know, they're not ripped out and replaced. So in rural Surrey, in Guildford, there's loads of Siemens machines. They've been there for a while. They've been the sitting tenant since I've been in Farnham for like 15 years. So the market, from our point of view, is Siemens and Siemens machines and them replacing the reagent packs on those machines, old for new. The competition, Roche and Abbott, they have other machines in other hospitals, and we have a prenup with Siemens such that we can't supply the antibodies to those companies. Well, so that can never be part of our market. Coincidentally, there's also the number four company, Beckman Coulter. They do also have a new test, and they have an antibody that was made by a sub-licensee of ours, Randox in Northern Ireland. So we will derive some modest benefit from that activity.
Yeah, Peter, I noticed the biggest income stream is from the vitamin D test. How safe is that? I mean, how safe is the income stream?
Do you mean how safe is vitamin D testing and the implication of vitamin D testing, or how safe is it for us as a business and our vulnerability?
Yeah, how safe is that income stream, the continuity?
Okay, how reliable is it in continuity?
Yeah. I'm particularly interested in the number of tests that might be done. Could the number of tests drop off?
My best guess for the vitamin D market in dollars is that it will plateau. A lot of you will know that I've been saying that for 2 years now, and yet our sales are growing by 20, 25%. So obviously I've been wrong for the last couple of years. But nevertheless, I think from our point of view, the vitamin D testing market will plateau in dollars. And I've seen some external market research from a specialist company confirming that assumption. So I think vitamin D testing is here to stay. So I don't think it's a fad, but I think the growth has come to an end. That would be my best prediction.
So when they do the vitamin D testing, what is it that, I mean, what is it the shortage of vitamin D is going to do to you?
Vitamin D deficiency, if you kind of take an extreme example, if you're a pregnant lady and you get yourself tested in March and you're pregnant and vitamin D deficient, I think there's no doubt you'll be doing harm to your developing embryo. If you're in an old person's home and you don't go out at all or take any supplements, you will be vitamin D deficient. I think most people think that if you're heavily deficient, you'll be compromising your long-term health.
Thank you very much, Peter.
Thank you.
PI World videos and podcasts are for general information and interest. They do not constitute any kind of recommendation or inducement to buy shares of any company. PI World is not offering any kind of financial advice, and nothing in our material should be taken as such.